This is a Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation.
Joining us very kindly, Nicole Holmes and Kelly Prentice. Nicole Holmes is an Access and Technology Officer, and Kelly is an O&M Specialist from Guide Dogs New South Wales ACT. And they're going to talk to us about developments in technology influencing the future of O&M, and it sounds like a very interesting topic. Nicole and Kelly, thanks for joining us, and you have the floor.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nadia. So I'm Nicole. As Nadia mentioned, I'm Access and Technology Officer at Guide Dogs New South Wales and ACT. If you're not already aware, Guide Dogs New South Wales and ACT operates across New South Wales and ACT, providing free services for people who are blind or vision impaired. We have been conducting some research into O&M related technologies, or things that could enhance somebody's orientation through using technology. So today we're going to talk about some of our findings, and also looking to the future, some new things that are on the horizon in terms of O&M. I'll let Kelly now introduce herself.
I'm Kelly Prentice. I'm an orientation and mobility specialist, and I'm operating out of the Chatswood office at the moment. And yeah, so Nicole and I have been working quite closely together over the last few years on a few projects, and tonight the main one we're focusing on was a research we did about a couple of years ago on using video streaming. Nicole, continue.
Yeah, so basically we went on the prospect that, well, everyone has an iPhone, and therefore, everyone these days, most people have a smartphone. So on particularly our devices, you have FaceTime, which is a video linking service.
Do you want me to take it?
Yeah, also, yeah, if you want to continue with what we found from CSUN.
Yeah. So the first time I got the idea for our first study was that I'd attended the CSUN conference in California and was listening to Mike May. And he was talking about how he had become disorientated in a hotel room and couldn't quite understand the layout. So he got out his phone and used FaceTime and dialed a friend, and they sorted it out for him. He was also talking and referring to a lot about how with GPS, the last few frustrating meters, you can't quite get there, but you get within the vicinity. So with those two concepts together, I thought about how more people could be utilising their iPhone to deal with these situations, or a smartphone.
So for our study, we first used an iPhone 4S. And progressed to an iPhone 6 later on. And we used that on a neck lanyard, so the phone was around your neck, it could be hands-free, and also with Bluetooth bone conduction earphones.
So Nicole and I set about to using that technology to explore what situations it could be useful for. So we set up some scenarios and explored the this in those particular scenarios. And the scenarios we looked at, we wanted them to be representative of the typical frustrating situations a person with a vision impairment could face on a daily basis.
So we really wanted to know or to investigate how this FaceTime could be incorporated into people's travel, given that the iPhone already performs so many functions in terms of GPS and travel-related apps.
So we started with me sitting in the guide dog's office, and Nicole would go out into these various environments that we set up some of these scenarios at. So these environments included shopping centres, supermarkets, bus interchanges, residential areas, and road crossings. But it soon became clear that holding the iPhone in one hand wasn't practical, so that's where the lanyard came in. And then we also worked on positioning of the camera and making it hands-free with it around the neck.
So I'll go back one tiny step and just mention that I'm actually a guide dog handler myself, so I'm totally blind. So for this study, I used a combination of the guide dog and the cane at various points to compare the two different experiences. One of the things that we first noticed was that it was really important to get the terminology right when Kelly would orientate me through different environments. So being really clear about the information that she was giving me, so in terms of making left or right turns or clock face directions, she needed to be quite specific with that. In the beginning, or at times where I was walking fast, Kelly did experience a bit of motion sickness. And so our strategy to overcome this one was for me to slow my pace down and or hold the iPhone steady with my other hand. We had one interesting learning experience in a mall. So I had the phone around my neck and Kelly was, you know, guiding me or telling me what shops I was passing, and then suddenly somebody, a man, waved at her through the camera. So we figured out that the front-facing camera was being used, and so everyone could see Kelly on the phone as I was walking down the street. We quickly learnt to use the back-facing camera from that point on.
Yeah, I have no idea what my face was doing at that time or where I was looking. It was quite hilarious. We, as Nicole said, we trialled each situation with Nicole using her cane and her dog. And some of the specific scenarios were looking for shop entrances, reading signs. We tried multiple buses, unknown obstacles on a route, intersection identification and orientation to a product. So we'll start with the first, looking at shop entrances. And this scenario involved locating a counter in the middle of a food court in a mall. And Nicole had never been to this mall. It was Muck and Break. And it was in the middle of a food court in a mall near our office. And I was able to direct her through the mall to the counter and had her scan the front counter, and I identified the particular muffin I wanted for morning tea and had her bring it back for me. So thanks again, Nicole. It was delicious.
Oh, not a problem at all. So this being one of our very first trials, I did find it quite challenging to move through this really noisy and unfamiliar environment. But the key to locating the right counter was to stop and turn to the direction that Kelly was instructing me in. So slow down, make that really accurate turn, and then move ahead. The mall, while it was a little bit crowded, when I used my dog, she did obviously assist to move me around people and obstacles in the environment. But when the same exercise was done with the cane, I walked at a slower pace than with my dog. But this gave Kelly more time to give me information and also gave me time to ask questions of the environment that I was in.
So as I mentioned before, in the first few trials I did experience some motion sickness and needed to look away. But later on, as we had refined the technique to steady the phone and for her to slow down when required for me to give her extra detail, it wasn't an issue. When considering the difference between the cane and the dog travel, it was the level and type of information I would provide that was the main difference. For example, I would identify possible shorelines or give choices of which direction to move around an obstacle when Nicole travelled with her cane. However, obviously, when she's travelling with a dog, I'm not required to give that kind of information.
So we had some dropouts that did occur. And these situations were where I needed to use my orientation skills to keep myself safe until the signal returned. The dropouts were only for short amounts of time, maybe 20, 30 seconds each, but I did need to be confident in my ability to move away from any black spots. in an unfamiliar environment. It was always reassuring, though, when the FaceTime link was restored and I could continue getting information and reassurance from Kelly.
The next scenario we looked at was the really annoying problem of identifying buses amongst the lineup of buses at a bus interchange. So we got Nicole to stand at the top of the interchange and she would scan the camera down the road. And I could make out when a bus was coming in. Unfortunately, as you might expect, I could not identify the number of the second bus from the top of the bus interchange. It wasn't until she was right on top of it I was able to identify, or quite near it, I was able to identify what number it was.
Yeah, so for me this was quite disappointing. I thought using FaceTime could be a strategy to fix that issue of having multiple buses at an interchange, but unfortunately not. So the third scenario we trialled was identifying unknown obstacles in a residential area. It was extremely useful to know what I would be walking towards, things like rubbish bins, poles, overhanging branches, other pedestrians, and also to know which way or which direction I should take to move around these things. Again, in this situation, more detail was given when I used the cane rather than when I used the dog. And also Kelly could give more accurate information when I was stationary. The information that Kelly provided did increase my knowledge of this unfamiliar environment I was in. And I found that it added a bit of colour to my journey. So I was walking along and able to access all this information and know about all the features that I was walking past, whereas if I'd just been, you know, walking past without FaceTime, I may have picked up on there were signs and all sorts of things around.
So I was talking about when we're out in the residential areas and going along a street, sometimes depth perception could be a little bit out, just knowing whether a shadow actually was a significant drop-off or not. However, saying that, when Nicole was at Melbourne Airport and we trialled it there, I was able to identify a ramp quite easily the second time through the environment. I had adjusted to the camera angle and to the environmental cues that were around when I was giving her that information and warned her about the surface level change.
So for me, this was one of the most exciting trials we did. So I had already received assistance from the airport staff to get to my gate, and then I FaceTimed Kelly, and from there she was able to read my gate number, and then while I was walking away from the gate, she could identify all the shops and facilities that I was walking past. As Kelly mentioned, on the return route back to the gate, she was able to identify the ascending ramp. And then after successfully returning to the gate, and I used Kelly's assistance to find an empty seat as well, I felt I had a much greater knowledge of the airport, and I was, in fact, able to go back and choose the coffee shop that I wanted to go to. And so I didn't need assistance from those around me. And in this situation, I felt really quite empowered and that I was armed with exactly the same knowledge as any sighted person moving through Melbourne Airport that day.
The next scenario we looked at intersections. So I could describe features and angles of the crossing, and I could assist with a decision if the audio tactile feature of the lights weren't working and I could see the signal. However, as you expect, the field of view without additional lenses on the phone, and even at that point, it wasn't enough to assist with the actual road crossing decision.
So in this situation, although the layout of an intersection can be described quite well by some GPS devices or apps, I found this experience with FaceTime more effective as I was armed with more information about the road crossing. So things like whether or not the pram ramps are lined up, any sort of features on the road crossing that I wouldn't have been able to pick up with my GPS or my O&M skills. The next scenario was identifying shop signage and products. This has been a huge benefit, and it still remains one for me. So no longer do I need to ask a passerby or a friend to accompany or even organise O&M way in advance of my trip to the shop to provide face-to-face orientation to a centre.
So I could direct Nicole to angle her camera adequately for me to describe the shop and where the entrance was. And if the shop didn't have an easily identifiable signage, say it was in really cursive writing that was just hard to see even if you were in close to it, I was always able to work out what type of shop it was anyway by other clues, like it was a bakery or cafe. I directed Nicole in one particular situation into a supermarket and then through to the aisle, and she was after a specific product, and I was able to lead her all the way to it and then give her the options on the shelf of which one she was after. And I was also able to tell her that the guy that kept offering her assistance as she moved through the supermarket was the guy who ultimately served her at the cash register when she was leaving.
So, it really felt amazing walking through the aisles of this supermarket with Kelly reading all the signage and then identifying right down to the particular brand and type of tea it was in this case that I actually needed. So I know that there are lots of object recognition apps out there, but they can, you need to take a good photo and they do come with a bit of a time lag. So I found that in this situation, this was in a supermarket I'd never been into before, FaceTime could provide me orientation as well as the real-time identification of products and reading any instructions on the packaging as well.
So after this conclusion of this first study that we ran and identifying the positives and the limitations of these scenarios, we moved on to exploring the possibilities with other travellers with a vision impairment and getting their feedback. And these travellers were asked questions before training on how to use the camera and the app, and they were provided training on how to use the iPhone and the bone conduction headphones. And we did a short exercise indoors before we went outside. And then we gave questions after the exercise. And the particular exercise we asked was for them to locate a place to post a letter nearby to our office. This meant they could either opt for a post box or the post office shop itself.
So we asked the travellers a set of pre-trial questions, and we found that all of them were independent travellers and all long cane users. Two out of the four use an iPhone, and two of them had used FaceTime before, but not for orientation purposes. The other two participants had no experience with getting assistance via video link, but they were familiar with touchscreen concepts. All the travellers reported that they use a combination of self-orientation and assistance from an O&M specialist, but this was dependent on the complexity of environments and whether or not they need to visit different places regularly. All the travellers stated that they preferred to ask questions of an environment rather than just receive a steady stream of information about the environment from the O&M. So all the travellers were very positive about their experience with FaceTime when we did the exercise to the post office. They really appreciated having a set of eyes to call on, and everyone felt that they had more knowledge of the area after completing the exercise. So they reported that it was fantastic to know about things like pedestrian crossings on the route and also the shops that were nearby that they were walking past. So the travellers identified some situations where they felt FaceTime could be useful, and these were for identifying shops and products, identification of parks and open areas, where there's construction or where trees might be down or barricades up. One particular traveller reported that he would love 24/7 access to a service like FaceTime, where he could just dial anytime and get the information that he needs there and then. All the participants felt that it would be best for an O&M specialist to give information. So in situations where they might be lost or needing technical O&M related information about an area. One traveller explained that he'd be happy to probe any person to get more information. So it was found that an O&M was important, but not essential, and depending on the situation that the traveller was in. So some were confident enough to get information from other people, whereas others really felt like they would only trust an O&M and not rely on family and friends or other people.
What surprised me was that the traveller with tunnel vision, who I thought had a vision that I thought would be quite similar to the tunnel vision coming out of the camera, actually found that it was good to have this information as well, because she hadn't realised some of the detail along the route at all, including that there was a pedestrian crossing that she was crossing. Another person really thought the audio quality was a big issue and that it needed to be in a particular headphone that suited them, and they preferred to redo the exercise using an earbud rather than using bone conduction headphones. And another comment that we didn't expect was, and of course made sense afterwards, is that it was important for one traveller that she had met us before the exercise, so that she could build a rapport, and that she felt that she could trust us and provided the information, as that was a key element of the experience for her, that she had met us before and had rapport and felt that the information was reliable. A general observation I made was that it didn't take a lot of training at all for people to understand how to angle the camera in relation to their body to obtain the best view for information. And all the travellers were excited about the potential of video streaming to gain information.
So looking to the future from here, there would need to be further trialling of FaceTime for orientation purposes, but this could really fit in with some of the emerging technology. So, for instance, FaceTime could be implemented into some of the GPS apps like the Guide Dogs app or Blind Square, so you could get to a destination and then make that FaceTime call right from the app. It also has a place in the beacon world. So given that beacons they're programmed and they may not be updated, so FaceTime could also be used to provide any other information, or if a particular area has changed layout, or if there's a particular construction happening, then the beacons may not be so reliable as if you could, you know, use a video call and FaceTime a live person. It would also be useful, in those unexpected situations that you might find yourself in day to day. So a question to you all now, would you like to use FaceTime to get information while you're out and about?
Definitely. Yes.
Yeah. My name's Joyce. I'm computer shy, so I don't have an iPhone or a smartphone. So, you know, I have been told that they're very daunting, and I just couldn't be bothered putting the time in on them.
Fair enough. Yep.
Yeah. Colin and Rowena. Colin's just said he'd like to give it a go, but I'd just like to say that two questions, actually, to both of you, whoever wants to answer. One is, I find that when you're using video streaming with any app, it really chews up your battery. I'm wondering you know, for example, I use the guide dog's GPS app on a bus route, and then was intending to use it from the walk after the bus route, but after 20 minutes on the bus, it had flattened my battery from 100%, so I didn't have any more battery to use. And secondly, there's also an app out, which I'm sure you may be aware of and have tried, called Be My Eyes, which allow you to call volunteers anywhere in the world 24 hours a day with a video link to describe anything, not just for orientation, but if you know, trying to read something at home or whatever.
Yep.
Just wondering how FaceTime compares with that.
Yeah, so with your first question, yeah, the battery issue, that is a really good point, and it is something that we need to be aware of. You can buy things like battery cases, which will, you know, extend or even double your phone's battery, or plug-in devices that'll give it a boost. But I guess with our trials of FaceTime, they've really been quite short video calls. So generally, up to 5 minutes is the longest time that we've spent on a particular call. So in that respect, you know, it didn't tend to use a lot of battery, but yeah, so that's what we identified, that it would be situational rather than a half-hour video link session.
Yeah, so that leads us into a few of the other developments quite nicely, is that we looked at it purely from this short burst of situational information, whereas another application of video streaming that's happening in Western Australia is actually teaching through video streaming O&M skills, like teaching an orientation route or teaching long cane skills, and that's been done in by O&M specialists through Western Australia. And then it also leads into a subscription-based service that Nicole will speak about that's based in the US and available now.
Yeah, so Aira has recently become available. It is a video link service, again, through either your smartphone's camera or a pair of glasses with cameras on them. It's a subscription service, so you pay for a quota, a number of hours each month, and you're connected with what Aira calls an agent. Depending on what time of day you call, you don't have any control. Well, in certain situations, you might have control over who that agent is, but generally, you probably wouldn't. So when you call in, they can pull up a map of your location on their screen, and they've got a traveller profile about you as well. So they know the sorts of things like the mobility aids that you use, and your location information. And people are using this service in the US to, say, get directions to a destination and identify signs and things. So that is happening right now. And they've got different levels of service, so you can get different sort of quotas of hours depending on how much assistance you need each month. So importantly, these agents are trained in-house, so they're not O&M specialists. They're trained by, within the company of Aira itself. That is happening right now, and so they've got, I think, about 200 users actively using it already in the US.
Is that Aira? How do you spell that?
Yeah, so it's Aira. It's A-I-R-A.
Kevin?
Yes.
Thanks. Nicole and Kelly, just wondering, it's a great initiative, really good research. Just wondering where you think this service might fit, or what would be unique about your service compared to Be My Eyes and Aira and those other ones. Because, you know, obviously I'm thinking about the supermarket, I'm thinking about a couple of things, but where do you think, and how do you think it would work? Would it be a 24-hour, or would it be an on-call thing? How do you think it might work?
Yeah, we're still throwing some ideas around, but we really think it could be a service that is provided by O&M organisations where, you know, people could dial in if they need that little bit of assistance. We have orientation mobility specialists, you know, at least one in our office all the time. So it could be something they could do, just provide sort of that on-call type assistance in short spurts.
So I see it for things like for people who have like a short question, like maybe does my cane tip need replacing, or what can you see what's going on my dog's paw or something like that, and where it's just a short, quick question that the video link could assist getting a quick answer to that rather than have someone travel to your house to answer that kind of question.
Right, so an O&M, more O&M specific type inquiries.
Yes, and or, you know, for those situational things where it's unexpected but you want that quick bit of information, but it would always be back to travel and O&M predominantly if it was coming from us.
Whereas
I think the Be My Eyes, with that app in particular, you're connected to anybody. You don't have any control over who the person is. It could be anyone around the world. Whereas, I don't know, people might find it more, find that bit of reassurance if it's coming, assistance is coming from an O&M specialist.
And you've got orientation. Someone accountable for that information and for that service because you know where to give that feedback to. And that person would be easily able to be tracked.
Yeah, great, thank you.
It's Jamie here. I joined the meeting during the chat. Just wondering, it might be an ideal thing through the Guide Dogs app, perhaps, rather than having to go out and try and initiate a FaceTime or whatever call.
Yeah.
It'd be ideal to have it from within an app, you know, so you're not fiddling around and messing around.
Yeah, that's definitely the ideal. We'd love to integrate FaceTime so that you might have a button in the app. So once you get to your destination or whatever, you can just tap that button and you're instantly connected. Yeah.
Yeah, to help with those frustrating last few metres of finding the actual door or the number of the place you're outside.
Mm. Hi, it's Francois. First of all, to answer your question, I think it's an amazing idea. I mean, this morning I went to what I was hoping was a post office. It took me 5 minutes before somebody decided to entertain the fact that I'm there and confirm that it was the post office. I think, Nicole, you mentioned that you don't hold the phone in your hand. So if you're carrying the phone in a lanyard kind of thing, how would you go? Is that kind of set up readily available somewhere to have a pouch with a lanyard thing that allows you to carry the phone in your chest or wherever? And secondly, when you walk down the down the pavement, could your camera, Kelly still able to see the signage as you were walking, or do you have to stop every now and then and face the shop fronts, or do you have to tilt the camera? Can you maybe explain?
Yeah, sure.
Exactly how it works.
So, the lanyards for phones are definitely available. The one I got was called Landskin. I got that from the US. So basically, yeah, the phone was around my neck, but it was quite important that I was able to hold the phone steady or angle it with my other hand. There were occasions where I could be walking down the street and she could identify the signage, but also there were times where I'd have to stop, and most of the time I'd turn my body so that I knew the actual direction that the phone was pointing in the direction that I was facing. And then I would, use my hand to angle the camera up or down, or, you know, move closer to the particular sign that she was trying to read.
It will take some practice, won't it? A little bit of practice.
Does take a little bit of practice. Generally scrubbing
down.
Long.
Yeah. No. That's what we were saying earlier when we had it with the other people. I was surprised it didn't take that long for them to clue in. On how to angle the camera. And I guess the other thing that we've kind of quickly mentioned a little bit is Bluetooth beacons and how they're coming for for dealing with the indoor travel situations through malls and train stations, things like that. So there's been some preliminary studies with those as well, and that'll be a great another added layer of information that hopefully people can customise to their preferences.
Yeah. Anyone else want to talk? Kevin,
Kevin, I'll go after you. It's Nadia.
Oh, thanks, Nadia. Sorry.
No worries. No, go.
I think that's great, Nicole and Kelly, because we were in Wellington a little while ago and they have a lot of beacons. The City Council has funded for 200 beacons to be put into shops in the central city. And it's incredible to walk along and just have the shops announced. And then you walk into the shop and then it tells you the counter's on your right or your left, whatever it is. But as you say, that needs to be updated all the time, et cetera. And there might be line specific things that we want to know about, like our dog or our cane or whatever it is. So I do think there's a niche there that if there was someone to call in terms of an O&M specialist, it would just make that whole experience even more, you know.
Also, we just want to mention, I know there's not too many, I don't think there's too many people from New South Wales office, but we just always want to make people aware of the ability to give feedback to the organisation, because the organisation is there for everyone, and the more feedback the better the organisation becomes paid. So if anyone is from New South Wales and wants to give feedback, the best email is feedback@guidedogs.com.au.
It's Nadia. I can see the potential for this project to be supported through the with the introduction of the National Disability Insurance Scheme. There's a part of that scheme is called the Information Linkages Capacity Building Program or tier or whatever. It's funding for general projects that empower people with disabilities to become more independent. So I can see the potential for organisations to actually have support or gain funding to do more research into this and possibly run such a program in the future. The supermarket is a really good thing. I often go to the supermarket and it's difficult to get assistance. It's difficult to find things unless you remember where things are. And then they change stuff as soon as you work out where everything is. They move the furniture on you. So it's kind of challenging, and it would be good to get into the supermarket and ring somebody and say, okay, I need this. Can you tell me which aisle it might be in? I think I'm around the right spot, but I'm not sure. You know, those kind of really quick sort of things as opposed to the whole trip. There's just so much potential there. Are there any other questions?
Another question, just a statement. I just want to also emphasise, you know, it's fantastic that you've put this research together. I think that's it's a fantastic thing that you've done, taking an idea, then following it through and actually having a look to see what works and what doesn't. It's going to be really useful information to go forward. But I did have a question, and that would be, and I don't know whether you looked at what sort of data was being used when you're using the streaming and whether that was significant to make a cost-prohibitive thing for some people.
Yeah, we did measure that, and I think the longest call we made would have been, say, I've got it here, in fact, so 10 minutes, and we used 20 megabytes. So, yeah, it's fairly minimal, the data usage. We will be taking this further in terms of looking at how we can potentially provided as a service, but also keeping a tab on things like IRA as well, because they have a little bit more technology to be able to, you know, view locations on a map and do a few different things, so that the O&M would be best for them to have access to that kind of information. But ultimately, for us, we really want to see increased use of technology to bridge the gap and, you know, aim for equal access, particularly to environmental information.
Yeah, information that's immediate, personalised and current. So thank you very much.
No other questions from any of our participants?
Just one more, Nadia, if I may. And I'm sure you're aware that the International Guide Dog Conference is on next year. Just wondering whether you were in a position to gather what you've got and, you know, and put a paper towards that. Is that your thought?
That's something we could definitely look at doing. Particularly,
but
that's
you
going
just
to be,
definitely have Ira there. They presented like three different sessions at BFUNG last week or the week before.
Well, the other suggestion would be that we plan to, this is Dog Got Hands Australia, hold our conference either before or after the International Guide Dog Conference, because I bet that's basically available to service providers, not consumers. So, you know, something that you could pull together, I think, would be fantastic at our conference.
Yeah,
we'd love to.
Thank you. Any final questions from anybody?
Have any other states been interested in doing a similar project?
Well, as I mentioned, the Western Australia are doing the video stream, but they did it from a different angle, where it's not the consumer controlling it. They're actually teaching the O&M through the video streaming. So they may be teaching someone in Kalgoorlie and they're in Perth how to use their cane or be orientated to where they want to go. But that's done with a support person watching, and they're also hooked into the conversation between the O&M and the client.
Mm-hmm.
So that one's using a GoPro camera and harness.
No, it's still a smartphone, but it's on a GoPro harness.
It's Nadia. I was just about to say, yeah, I can see the potential where really simple, you know, if you're a dog user and your dog is doing something in a particular place or veering or something and you're not quite sure, or balking at crossing a road or something, you can quickly, you know, ring up and maybe that would help. But certainly the GoPro being linked to, you know, your technology and then back to the specialist, I can see the potential for less, I guess, travel for simple questions. And I guess the simple things are the things that will be, that this will be an important feature for, as opposed to the more intensive support.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Thank you, Kelly. Thank you, Nicole. We really appreciate you coming to our meeting in the evening, and we look forward to seeing progress of this work, and hopefully in 2 years' time or a year and a half's time, we'll be able to hear you speak about it and about the progress that might have been made at our
we'll be
conference.
Sure to keep you all updated on our progress, and thanks very much for having us.
This has been the Dog Guide Handlers Australia audio presentation. If you would like further information on Dog Guide Handlers Australia or like to listen to further audio, please go to our website www.dgha.org.au. Thank you. Do you always have to have the last word?